As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello, and welcome to a live episode of The Metrospective. I'm Ted Berg, joined by Tim Britton from Oakland as the Mets get set for a three-game series against the A's. We will take questions from listeners when they make their way into the queue or pep up in the chat. But before we do, Tim, first, hello.
Hello, Ted. What's up?
I have a handful of questions, but one is something that I think will come up a bunch today. I suspect we're going to get a lot of time. We're going to get a lot of questions about the last few spots on the Mets postseason roster. They clinched on Tuesday before we spoke or after we spoke. I don't know. They clinched. They're going to the postseason. We know that. We don't know for sure what seed they'll be yet. They got to hold off the Braves. It looks like they're safe over the AL Central winner, presumably the Cardinals. And look, the Cardinals have clinched it already. Either way, they're going to the postseason. They're going to have to pick a roster. And it's going to come down to some decisions like, you know, do they carry Terrence Gore to do what he does, or do they take a 13th pitcher, or do they take a second right-handed bat, et cetera? Who makes that call? Like, we talk a lot about that call, but who is making that call here?
So right before we get to this, I do have one completely non-baseball question that you, my co-host who has appeared on Jeopardy, I feel like might know the answer to, because it struck me last night while I was driving in the Bay Area obviously every radio station here starts with K. You know, KNBR is the big sports talk radio station out here. And you know, back home in New York, every radio station starts with W. And I believe it's like the Mississippi River is the dividing line for that. But I also don't know why we can't just choose radio station numbers that don't start with W or K. And I feel like of all the people I know, you might be the one who knows the answer to this.
I have no idea. I'm embarrassed to say I have absolutely no idea. I was, when you said that, I thought you were going to ask where is the dividing line, and my hunch said the Mississippi, but I don't even know why I thought that. It could be the Continental Divide for all I know. I know that that is the case, but I don't know why that's the case. I'm sure someone does and is welcome to let us know in the chat, or we could turn to google.com at some point.
Oh, I've never tried that one. I'll give that a shot. So to answer your real question, I think it's a combination of people in the front office. It's not one person making a rule by fiat, but it's, you know, the way they've made kind of roster decisions all season long, which is Billy Epler in concert with Buck Showalter. You know, the last thing Epler wants to do is to say, like, you're taking Terrence Gore on your roster, and Buck Showalter being like, no, I'm never going to pinch run him if you do that. You know, you want to have players on the roster that your manager wants to use and likes using. So they've got to be, you know, in step with that. You know, you've got other members of the front office. Certainly the analytics team is probably analyzing, you know, how different guys match up against specific pitchers and specific teams. You know, is Terrence Gore more valuable against certain teams versus others? Does Mark Vientos' swing match up with certain left-handed pitchers better on one team and Darren Ruff's better against another? Those are the kinds of things you're looking into at this point in the season, the kind of scouting you're doing, advanced scouting work you're doing. But that is, it's a collaborative decision from the entire front office. You want everyone on the same page with those kinds of decisions. And the Mets have been pretty good at being on the same page. I can't remember an instance where, you know, back in 2018, whatever it was. Yeah, 2018, Mickey Callaway would talk about, you know, people would ask, why is he playing Jose Reyes? Why is Jose Reyes on the roster? And he would say, like, I can only manage the people who are here. And Jose Reyes should not have been on the roster. And Showalter has not kind of expressed that kind of exasperation with the players who are on his roster at any point this season. You know, it seemed like when we were talking about why isn't Vientos there, that Showalter was very much on board with him not being there in the first part of September. He was part of the conversation to not have him there. So I think that's how it goes.
Well, I would say also that there's a distinction in professionalism and Buck Showalter that we witnessed to date. But for something like a Gore decision, especially, like, I'm trying to consider how the analytics team would even go about trying to quantify that, right? Like, how much better is Terrence Gore than the replacement pinch runner, who presumably has some other value elsewhere? Like, how much better as a runner is he, and how much value can you assign to that over the course of a short series? It's sort of a fascinating thing. But to me, it seems like ultimately, like, Showalter has to be in the room making that call, because, like, he's the guy. He's the guy who's going to deploy these weapons. And and I hate thinking like, oh, you should just let the guy go with his gut. I don't believe that. But you almost have to say at some point, like, maybe there's not going to be a lot of there's not going to be a great way to put math to Terrence Gore's value.
I mean, I think you'd probably look at, what other team, how good other teams are at avoiding stolen, preventing stolen bases. If they have maybe relievers late in games who are especially good at that, I'm trying to think of. The relievers generally aren't very good at that. You know, closers in particular are not known for being good at preventing base stealing. If you have basically the closer version of Andy Pettit, which I don't think exists, who's got that kind of pickoff move to dissuade someone from stealing, then maybe you don't carry Terrence Gore for that series. But and I think the debate with Gore isn't, you know, how much better is he than some other position player you're going to bring up. Right. Maybe it's with a third catcher, but it's probably more, you know, what's the value of Terrence Gore as a pinch runner versus a 13th pitcher on your roster. And to me, I think, you know, that Gore gives you something that more than, you know, whether it's Trevor Williams or Tommy Hunter or Carlos Carrasco / Taijuan Walker, whoever's not starting in that series, Gore gives you something else that those guys probably, you know, those guys are probably pitching mop up innings in a postseason series. You're not expecting them to participate in a high leverage moment. And I think you'd rather have the guy who might help you out in a high leverage moment.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. And looking over, you know, we talked about the roster decisions last week a little bit. I want to get to call soon. If you assume four starting pitchers, there's like five locks to me for the bullpen in Diaz, Lugo, Ottavino, Givens, and I think now May, based on how well he's been pitching lately. And then you're talking about like seven guys for three or four spots. And I don't know, it's hard to figure how that last guy is going to be so much, just because you can spread out the innings a little bit. It's hard to figure out how that last guy is going to prove more useful in a series than a guy like Gore. Josh M has been waiting to ask a question. Josh, what is going on?
Hey guys, how are you? So I know hitting coaches the last couple of years have taken up probably way more airtime than they should have, but luckily this year we haven't heard a whole lot about Eric Chavez, which I'm taking as a good thing. What have you guys heard about how he's received by the players, and what is he doing differently that has kind of cleaned up some of the gripes we've had in the past with hitting coaches?
That's a good question, Josh. Thanks for it. I think, you know, the combination of Eric Chavez and Jeremy Barnes, you know, the Mets have had an assistant hitting coach for a while, going back to, you know, Tom Slater was that guy for a while with Pat Russler for a few years, and then with Chili Davis when he came in, when they made the change last year, is Hugh Quattlebaum and Kevin Howard. With Chavez and Barnes, I think, you know, the hardest thing about being a hitting coach is, like, you have a philosophy of how a team should hit, how individual guys should hit. Not every player you coach shares that philosophy. It's useful to have kind of a broad range of expertise between the two guys you have as coaches. And Chavez has all of that playing experience, knows how to communicate with players, knows how to talk them through slumps, maybe better than someone who hasn't played in the majors. You know, I feel like Chavez leans a little bit more like Chili Davis that way, that ability to speak with them, whereas Barnes brings kind of the analytical side, the technical background, can really break down and dissect a swing really well. And so there are players for whom that's the approach they want. You know, Jeff McNeil and Brandon Nimmo are looking for two entirely different things from their hitting coach. And the Mets now have two guys who can kind of cater to both sides of that. So I think that's been really helpful. And then, you know, they listened to the feedback they got last year on why it didn't work out with Hugh Quattlebaum and Kevin Howard. And they thought it was getting a little too overly detailed in terms of the advanced meetings they were having each day. And so now it's more of a laid back advanced meeting. They're not going as deep into the stats. They've also they've changed one of the rooms in Citi Field to be kind of where they have the advanced meeting, which I think has allowed people to kind of take it more seriously. It's a workplace room rather than just gathering somewhere for a couple minutes. So I think, you know, overall it's been a better all around approach for the offensive coaching staff and guys that they've been able to get used to now over the course of a season. And you would think with a full off season and a full spring training, unlike they had this past year, would get even better going into next year.
Yeah, I don't have much to add to that, except that in, you know, in my experience, or at least in talking to guys around the league, you hear a lot that, like, it's always going to be a your mileage may vary thing with hitting coaches. Some guys want tons of information, some guys want very little. And so, you know, you need to be a little bit flexible there.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's go to Daniel V, who's been waiting on the line. Daniel, what's up?
So I just joined, but, you know, obviously the division fight is going to be fun the last couple of weeks. But looking ahead into October, is there a team that we think, or that you guys think, the Mets would want to see over another? So, you know, let's say they don't win the division. Let's say they've got to play the wild card round. Would they rather see the Phillies or the Padres going into the divisional round? Would they rather see the Braves or the Cardinals? Just kind of, you know, predicting, not predicting winning, you know, who's going to win each round, but are there teams based on matchups and lineups and who, the way we've played them this year, that you think are would be an easier path to the championship series, where we expect to see the Dodgers and then potentially the World Series?
Yeah, thanks for the question, Daniel. I think you probably say out of the, you know, what, there are six other teams that are kind of in postseason contention right now. I would say the Mets probably most want to face the Brewers or the Phillies. They're the two worst teams in that list. They've got the worst records of teams in contention for the postseason. The Mets have played pretty well against both of them. I think it's 4-2 against Milwaukee and 14-5 against Philadelphia. The Brewers are, as an offense, are better against right-handed pitching, but I don't think that would probably help them out against the Mets' right-handed pitching. And then the Phillies, you know, neither team really has the left-handed pitching to shut down the Mets offense the way maybe St. Louis does or LA in particular has. Philly, you know, the Mets have done well against Aaron Nola and Zach Wheeler this year. I think they're 9-0 in games started by those guys. And they have shown throughout the season an ability to exploit or capitalize on another team's defensive mistakes. And Philadelphia offers you that. And they're also not like fully healthy at the moment with Castellanos out for a little bit. So I think that's, and Wheeler coming back. I think that's the team you'd look at probably as most favorable in a division series. You know, St. Louis would scare me a little bit more because now they've got a couple left-handers in that rotation. They play extremely sound defense, or as good a defensive team as just about anyone in baseball. The lineup is versatile. They've got two MVP candidates in the middle of it. Albert Pujols is doing whatever he is back on a roll. So I think that's a team I would not want to see in a division series. You know, San Diego's the Mets lost the season series to, and while the Padres haven't played up to what we all expected coming out of the trade deadline, like, there's the chance they find that. You know, you don't want Juan Soto is the best player, or, you know, it's probably Juan Soto and Mookie Betts are the best all-around players you might see in a postseason series, and you'd rather not face those guys. So I would probably put the hierarchy as Milwaukee/Philadelphia ahead of everyone else, and then maybe like St. Louis, San Diego, and then Atlanta and LA are the two teams you probably want to avoid the most.
Yeah, I think you want to play the good teams. You want to play the bad teams and avoid the good teams, right? Not that there are any bad teams. Not that I think it matters all that much. But, yeah, you say the Phillies because we know they're bad fundies.
Exactly. You know, we've seen there have been a number of games where the Mets have fallen behind Philadelphia. And they've been able to come back in various ways because they put the ball in play a lot. And that is, I mean, kind of similar to what the Royals did to the 2015 Mets. The 2015 Mets were not a sound defensive team, and that gets exploited over the course of a longer series.
Right. And you could always face the Phillies and they go bombs away and they, you know, and they beat you up. And it's a very frustrating way to lose. But I think if you're trying to pick a matchup, you can just start with the record. Especially like a team like the Phillies has seemed they're beatable in a bunch of different ways. It doesn't mean the Mets will beat them. It just means that's if you're trying to pick the most beatable team. Yeah, it's the ones that have been beaten the most. Here's Daniel G. Daniel, what is up?
Hey guys, so maybe a little early in the session for a goofy question, but we all saw Steve Gelbs as the Polish sausage the other day. Yes. And I haven't been to City Field in a few years, but I think they might have done like a first responders type race, but nothing to the full level of gimmick that say Milwaukee or Washington does with their mascot race. So my question to you is, if you got to choose what mascot race the Mets should choose to go full gimmick, what should it be, and why is it the SNY broadcast crew?
This seems up your alley, Ted. My initial impulse would be I think the Mets did like a video version of it with like subway trains.
Yeah, in the past. Forever.
They don't do that anymore. So my thought was people dressed as subway trains. I'm not sure that works.
Yeah, I mean, before they did the subway trains, they used to do planes, you know, because they were at I think Shea Stadium, it was such a hallmark of the experience that there were planes flying overhead, that they did like a plane race around New York City, which then I think got phased out for grim reasons. But I would say, you know, to me, like the character race thing is that belongs to the Brewers. Like I know other teams have taken it up, and obviously like the presidents in Washington is a whole thing. I would try to come up with an original idea if you were going to go full gimmick. Like when the Braves unveiled the freeze and beat the freeze, I thought that was just like the funniest thing. And also like it's exciting to watch and cool and just like so funny to me to see this guy catching up to these like drunk dudes trying to race him. So I can't think of something off the top of my head, but I would say I'd rather see them go that route, like come up with your own new thing rather than just be like, oh, we want to be more like the Milwaukee Brewers.
Yeah, we're going to see like the I think the A's do like the A's Legends race. They've got different people. I think, you know, I think there's an Eckersley, might be Ricky Henderson. I don't know who all of the characters are. We'll see this weekend. But yeah, like beat the freeze was, you know, that first time that the guy looked over his shoulder and face planted, was one of my favorite moments in recent baseball history. So I think doing something really innovative would be worth it.
I believe the Diamondbacks also do the team legend thing, because there is definitely a photo of me somewhere with like a giant Randy Johnson.
Is it just Randy Johnson running against like other versions of Randy Johnson?
Yeah, it's like Randy Johnson races like Luis Gonzalez and Mark Grace or someone. Let's see. So no one in the queue right now, checking into the questions in the chat. It is mostly people informing us that there was a conference about 100 years ago, in which the U.S. was given 4 different call letters for the start of their radio stations. K and W, were the commercial radio stations with the Mississippi as the dividing line. We were correct about that. There are also N and A stations, which, are the domain of the military.
Well, good on Rocco B. Rocco Baldelli coming through with that knowledge. Yeah. Thank you, Rocco.
We had Daniel V coming by to ask a question, which we again assumed to be Daniel Vogelback, and Rocco B. here in the chat. Tim, back to the decisions we were discussing earlier. No, let's not go back to that. Let's go to Evan Gaddis, perhaps, or some other Evan G, who is here waiting to ask a question.
So I have 2 questions for you guys. I got one right now question and one more about the Mets' future. The one right now is we saw what happened with Drew Smith the other day. But also we've seen the Mets give Tyler McGill some trials. And do you think that if the Mets are in another high leverage situation, such as Wednesday, do you think they're going to go back to Drew Smith, or are they going to give McGill a chance in a high leverage situation? Because to be honest, the 2 times he's pitched were pretty low leverage, and it's, unless you think he's just going to be a long reliever, wouldn't it make sense to give him a shot in a high leverage situation? And then my other question is more of a future one, is can you guys talk a little bit about the guys that the Mets have playing in the or who are going to play in the Arizona Fall League?
Well, I'll take the first question first. Thanks, Evan, for both of them. I think there, I remember asking Buck Showalter this, 10 days ago when they were just talking about bringing McGill and Smith back, asking, do you have the luxury of easing these guys back into big time spots, or is the time crunch such that you just kind of throw them in the deep end? And he said, yeah, like there's not enough time to do that. So we saw obviously with Smith coming in a bases loaded 2-out situation, and then giving up the grand slam to Brasso. McGill didn't pitch particularly well his first time out. You can say it's low leverage, but it was trying to preserve a perfect game. So it had its own kind of pressures to it. I think they're going to look at those guys in big spots, because that's what they want to see them do in the postseason. So they're going to use the rest of the regular season as a chance to do that. It's not like, I don't think they're going to be pitching 8th innings with 1-run leads at this point. But that kind of spot for Smith the other day, it's, you're already down 2 runs to see if he can get out of the inning. You're hoping going into that this is a chance for him to get some confidence by getting a big out. And instead, obviously, it goes as badly as it could have. But I think that, they're going to throw those guys into the fire because that's the only way to find out whether they've got anything. Because you're right. If you're going to pitch Tyler McGill only in low leverage or only as a long reliever, you're probably better off just taking Trevor Williams, because he's done that all season and he's done it very well. You want to see what ceiling there is for those 2 guys before you get into October. And then on the Arizona Fall League, I'll be honest, I haven't paid too close attention to it. I don't think I've seen that any of their major prospects are going there. So that is something I will probably do more research on if and when the Mets season comes to an end. That'll be more of a project for then. Sorry about that.
I pulled up the roster. Their number 11 prospect, Mike Vassell, Grant Hartwig, number 22 prospect. It's not a lot of the top guys and big names. So I'm not sure your priorities are off if you're focused on the big league club as it proceeds to the postseason. I want to add, though, just in terms of like giving McGill and Smith high leverage innings, I'm all for it. But right now, they got to win these games, right? Because if you can't hold off the Braves in the division, you have a much bit harder road in the postseason. So, like, it's lovely to be able to assess how well Tyler McGill is gonna play in a big spot. But, like, ultimately, if that's a big spot, you need Lugo or Ottavino or Givens or, you know, someone who can do that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's eighth inning, one run game situations. I think 10th inning, runner on second. I think that's a spot you might see McGill. I think they like his strikeout stuff in spots like that. That's probably as high leverage as it would get for him at this point. Otherwise, you're talking sixth and seventh inning big spots like the Brasell one the other day with Smith, you know. I know it's weird to think about it this way because it feels so important in the moment, but the leverage index on that Brasso at bat was probably relatively low, because the Mets' chances of coming back were relatively low. And one thing when I've talked to relievers this year, and asked them kind of how they're feeling in September, a lot of them have said, you know, I feel as fresh as I've ever felt this month because I haven't been used excessively this season. And one of the reasons one reliever told me is because, you know, Showalter doesn't really chase wins all the time. You know, you can't, if you're putting in Ottavino or Lugo in every game, you're down 2-0 like that. That's going to add up really fast. So I think those are the situations they're looking for, kind of those not necessarily high leverage, but medium leverage spots where, okay, it's a two run game in the fifth or sixth inning. You're behind. Can McGill or Smith eat you innings to get you, you know, into the back end of your bullpen and give your offense a chance to catch up? I think those are the spots they're really looking for the postseason, as guys to kind of bridge between your starter and your set bullpen, your A bullpen for a given night.
I think that's a good place to wrap up and maybe an instructive way to move forward. Let's not necessarily chase the wins this week. We have to keep ourselves fresh for the postseason.
That's one way to put it, yeah.
Tim, until next time, peace out.
Adios.